Well, there we are. I want to first of all say thank you for coming. It's such a very, very special day. We knew it would be a celebration because it's Jean's birthday. But I wanted to make it so much more than that. I wanted to make it a celebration of the community of grace and the church family that we know here at Central. And I want to thank Sandra, Jean's daughter, for helping to organize a wonderful get-together and getting the word out and seeing people here that I haven't seen in this building for some time. It's such a wonderful treat. So welcome, Cuthbertson family and Cuthbertson friends and friends of Jean's and friends of the church, and to people that have just come back to reacquaint yourselves with the place. And if you happen to wander in this morning thinking, well, it'd be a nice day to go to church, I hope you enjoy the surprise. Whenever I speak, and wherever I speak, there's always this expectation that there'll be some connection to gardening. And so I don't want you to be disappointed. I'll start with a little gardening story that actually started right here in Unionville. There was a house built around the turn of the last century, over 100 years ago. And I think it might have been 136, actually, just across the street and at the corner of Station Lane. It was a yarn shop not long ago. And the family that built it, thank you, the family that built it, the man of the house had a great passion for gardening. So he put up a picket fence and he put in a flagstone walk and he planted a beautiful garden, a garden very reminiscent of the time. You know, people at that time didn't have access to all the wonderful plant material we have today. So he planted a lilac and he planted a peony and a daylily and a variety of other things to create this gorgeous garden. And you know what happens to gardens over time? People grow up, people move away, and they go through cycles. And this particular garden went through a down cycle for a while after the family had moved away. The flagstone walk got all disoriented, and the plants died off, and the lilac became overgrown, and the white picket fence rotted and fell over. Until more recently, when another family moved in, and man of the house had an interest in reviving the spirit of the old garden. So he goes out and he replants all the old peonies and the lilacs and the daylilies, and he relays the beautiful flagstone walk, and he put up the white picket fence. He basically converted a mess into a beautiful, beautiful garden. Until one day in June, it's a Saturday, he was working in the front yard when the vicar walked by across the road on Main Street. And he yells out to him and he says, "Bill, isn't it amazing what God and man can do together?" And Bill said, "Yeah, and you should have seen it when God alone was in charge." So, that's it. That's your only gardening story you're getting this morning. I want to apologize right now, perhaps to Carl more than anyone, for the unconventional nature of this message. But I do want to address my subject, which is a community of grace. And some of you here were here in April when I started this discussion. And I want to review just a couple of things because a lot of you were not here. So a brief review, you could say, previously on. Grace is perhaps best understood when we study the hymn that we all know so well, Amazing Grace. Today, the most sung hymn in the Christian world, Amazing Grace. It's been estimated that Amazing Grace is sung or played on an instrument over 10 million times a year around the world. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Amazing Grace was written in 1773 by John Newton, an Englishman. Now, John was born in 1725, and he was, to say the least, a spirited individualist. His father was a merchant mariner who introduced John to life at sea when he was a young man of only 11, when he served as an apprentice seaman on his father's ship. Now, this was the beginning of a long personal journey that took place until his retirement at the age of about 37. Keeping in mind that the average life expectancy at the time was early 40s. John's mother died when he was only 6 years old, and his stepmother did very little to provide a positive influence on his life. He was shipped off to boarding school where he was abused, while his father sailed in the British Merchant Navy. When John joined his father aboard his ship at age 11, he was introduced to life at sea and all of the saltiness that's connected with that. While he learned new words of the four-letter kind, he developed a natural ability to express himself using the English language with flourish and skill. After adopting life at sea in the slave trade, the captain of one of Newton's ships wrote, "When he has run out of swear words, he makes them up. He is insubordinate and totally lacking in respect of authority." After a severe personal struggle, Newton fell in love with the daughter of a family friend, Polly Catlett, and he returned to the slave trade. In 1748, the slave ship for which John was responsible hit a violent storm, battering his vessel off the coast of County Donegal, north of Ireland. So severely was it damaged that he called out to God for mercy. And that marked a moment in his conversion. 2 weeks later, after listing out in the high seas, the ailing ship hit a rock offshore, and he released the slaves. Every person for himself. At that moment, yes, a conversion took place. We know that for sure. But he continued to support the slave trade and sponsored eight more slave ships over the next 7 years when he began his study of Christian theology. Now, I'd like to pause for just a moment and think about that story. Why did it take John Newton 7 years to complete his conversion and then take up studies to join the clergy and marry his love, Polly? And the answer is in the question. It took him 7 years to complete his conversion and to become an advocate for abolition of slavery because it took that long for Polly to convince him that the slave trade was evil. Newton's life journey took a right turn when the ship was hit by a storm, and that trajectory was intensified by the love of his life. Through Polly, his eyes were opened to the love of Christ and the truth of the gospel message, and slavery, he realized, had no place there. For a community to achieve a measure of grace, we need to take a journey. Here it is. Yeah, we were going to do pictures, weren't we? All right, just a sec. Let's try this, Sharon. Here we are. That's John Newton on a slave ship. That's Polly. And now I can move on. So, we need to take a community of grace, and it's not easy, because like John's life, there are many right turns. In the book of Luke, in the book of Luke, we learn that Jesus met a man who asked, "What do I have to do to receive eternal life?" And Jesus replied, "What do the scriptures say? To love the Lord your God with all your strength and all your mind and all your and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said, "Well, you're right. Do this and you'll live." "Yes, but," said the questioner, "who is my neighbor?" And Jesus responded with a story. "Well, there was once a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho when robbers attacked him, stripped him, and beat him, leaving him half dead. And it so happened that a priest walked down the road, and when he saw the man, he walked on by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite also came along, went over and looked at the man, and then walked on by on the other side." You know the rest of the story. A Samaritan, traveling that way, came upon the man, and when he saw him, his heart was filled with pity. He went over to him, poured oil and wine on his wounds, then bandaged them, and then he put the man on his own animal and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins, and he gave them to the innkeeper. "Take care of him," he told the innkeeper, "and when I come back this way, I'll pay you whatever else you spend on him, and I owe you." For all of us seeking God's grace, there is a personal journey to Jericho that we must take. And along the way, there are Samaritan moments. And there's a rub. It's up to us to identify the special moments in time and to seize the Samaritan moments. Now, here at Central United Church, we have a community of grace. Of course, we even have a grace. And there she is, right there. I have her permission to use the picture, by the way. So this is Grace Burden. Grace is married to Carl Burden. And one day I said to Grace, "Grace, tell me something. Is it really a burden being married to Carl?" And Grace looked up at me, because Grace looks up at everybody. And she said, "Mark," she used her finger like this, she said, "I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to go there." Moment of grace. Way to go. I think that was well handled. I have a personal reflection for you to share with you with regards to our journey here at Central, because it was a beautiful, sunny October day in 1981 when my wife Mary and I attended Central United Church for the very first time. We were recently married at the time, and we were childless, we were living in the neighborhood, and we were just simply attracted to the place. We knew no one here. We found our way to a pew, which, as Jean mentioned, was then facing east, and we sat down. And a man at the end of the pew slid down the well-worn wooden panel to whisper something. "You new here?" "Yeah." "Well, I'd suggest that you try Brown's Quarters United Church." He says, "They're not nearly as crowded as we are." It's a true story. So that was a moment of ungrace. And indeed, we were bewildered right throughout that service, I have to say. But until we were leaving, that is, before we were leaving, a young mother approached us, a mother of two young kids, a son and a daughter. And she said to us, "You're new here, right?" "Yes." "Welcome. My name is Jerry Seeley." And off she went. And she explained how the church was delighted to have us. And she introduced us to other members of the church before we left. She introduced us to her husband, Dennis, who is here this morning. And they both invited us to Friday Nighters, a time when adults of ages, all ages, met to have fun. I remember a car rally, euchre nights, carols in the home of the Seeleys on Christmas Eve, and I remember much more. Friday Nighters was a great way to integrate new members into a long-established congregation. Now we have the turkey and the roast beef dinner when people come together in a similar manner, because those of you that just buy tickets and show up don't know how much fun over 100 volunteers actually have doing that. And we have our upcoming study groups as well, of course. We had similar things, but we had Friday Nighters. Alas, we were saved in that moment by a redeeming moment of grace, thanks to Jerry and Dennis. And of course, meeting them led to many new friends that autumn that included Dave and Maureen Dudley, who we were neighbors with for about 10 minutes when they had one child and we didn't have any. And I remember meeting Daisy and Margaret Martin and Jean and Charlie Cuthbertson, and too many to mention, many here today, many like the Murphys that we haven't seen in a while. So I don't want to mention names, but you know, it's just great that you're here. And all the rest of you, Keelers, et cetera, it's wonderful that you're here. And I know why you're here. We're here, of course, to acknowledge this special moment with Jean, a moment of grace. If Jerry were here today, Dennis, I would say this to her. Jerry, on your road to Jericho, you sure know how to pick this Samaritan moment. To you, Dennis, Mary and I have been richly blessed by our long association with this church and this church family here at Central. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. And I can only wish that everyone here today, everyone that comes to Central, would have a similar kind of experience as we have. Friendship can blossom into other things, I've learned. I remember sitting in the outreach committee when the elder statesperson raised her hand to make an announcement. Margaret Martin, sister to Jean, had visited the home of Murray Dryden in Etobicoke and found a new charity that reached out to children in developing countries with a hand up, a bedroll, mosquito net, and kit that would provide a warm, clean place for them to sleep, safe from disease-carrying mosquitoes, a warm start for thousands of kids in a cold, difficult world. Margaret said, "Sleeping children around the world provides a bedroll for kids who would not otherwise have one. And all of our donations go directly to the kits and the cause, as the Drydens are covering all the overhead and travel costs here." Margaret Martin provided a Samaritan moment that night, and today we're all richer for it. Over 1 million bed kits have been distributed since 1970, and sleeping children around the world remains one of the central charitable endeavors on our list here at Central. There would be other Samaritan moments in our journey with Central. I recall the tension around the plan to build a new addition to our church in the early 80s. How could we afford the expansion? Would the design fit the heritage nature of the existing building? If we expanded, what would happen to the manse? Questions were endless, and answers were not easily provided. I remember one particularly difficult meeting in the basement of the old church where things were going decidedly backwards. Perhaps the risks were too great, and new families moving into Unionville should find a church home elsewhere. The whole scheme seemed doomed until a quiet, elderly man at the back of the room rose slowly to his feet. Alf Dyke was not a man of many words. His most active days in the church were behind him. His family, according to Gene, had been associated with Central for almost a century. He stood tall and lean, and he waited for silence in the room before speaking. And he simply said this: "I think that if Unionville is going to continue to grow and people want to come to our church, we should welcome them here. I don't think we have a choice but to take this leap of faith and expand our building." And then he sat down, and the silence hung in the air for the longest time, until someone spoke up in agreement. Two short sentences from a respected elder member of the church completely changed the mood in the room and the direction of the conversation. Central United would build. We would acquire debt. We would welcome more people into our congregation as sure as we sit here today. A moment of grace saved the day. This morning, as you walked into the sanctuary, you were handed a book titled Memory Lane. It's the Gene Cuthbertson story, and it's a gift from Gene. It's yours to keep. In it, you'll find many stories connected by common threads: the meaning of friendship, the value of having a well-articulated value system, the value of family, the importance of having a strong faith, and a liberal sprinkling of love. I asked Jean what she would like her children to remember her for as I interviewed her for the book. What advice would you have for them based on your own experience? And Jean said, "Enjoy your life. Share time with your friends and family. Based on my life experience, that includes my church family and my co-workers. Be creative. Make things happen. Be spontaneous, and be ready to do things and be ready for change. Volunteer. There are lots of ways to be helpful. Learn the power of communicating well." That was Jean's central message to her grandchildren. That, and don't hold grudges. Remember, everything that you do has consequences. Well, I replied to this with another question. When you think about the balance that you've created in your life between family, church family, working, raising four children, where would you place greater emphasis on any one of them? And Jean answered, "No. You see, Mark," she said, "I compare my life to a wheel." And she said, "I've shared this with my grandchildren. They know this. A wheel has all these spokes. Each spoke represents a different value in your life. Values that include fun, responsibility, work, friendship, love, and appreciation. All of these spokes are very important," Jean said. If any one of these spokes break, your wheel doesn't turn. So try to look after all of your spokes. In order to stay balanced, your spokes must be in good working order." Close quotation. A wheel with spokes that need constant tending. And at the center of the wheel, Jean? Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't ask, and she didn't say. Perhaps this is material for a future book. I suggest that at the hub, perhaps, Jean, is grace. But you can think about that and let us know. It's a useful image to each of us as we travel down our own personal road to Jericho, the city of grace, seeking out our Samaritan moments as we go. Jean shares many moments of grace in her new biographical book. It was my pleasure and my delight to record it. For all of us who read it and who know Jean, Our lives are richer. The book that you received this morning is a gift from Jean. She just asked one thing, that you consider making a donation to sleeping children around the world, and inside the book, just coincidentally, you'll find an envelope that takes money. I see leaves of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for you and me, and me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, a bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Jean and I have a deal. After I heard her sing this solo at a summer service here at Central United a few years ago, I called her that week, and I asked her if she would sing this at my funeral, and she said, you all right? I took that to mean she was inquiring about my health. And I said, Jean, I said, I've never been better. Okay, then it's a deal, she said. So before you jump to any conclusions, I want you to know that Jean's plan is to live to 120. So I'm very happy with this arrangement, as that would make me 91. That would be a pretty good run. This week is Jean's 90th birthday. All of you are invited to join her extended family downstairs for coffee, cake, and a celebration. And as we gather downstairs, I think that Jean would want you to know that her friends are family, and that all of us are her friends, and that all of us are a member of the community of grace. Amen.
Well, thank you, Mark. And thank you to Jean as well.